Chapter 4. No Ordinary Hero. I had to name the boy Red, after my friend who gave his life to save us all. Paul and I tried on various names for our daughter, and settled on Nadia, Russian for hope, which we need now. They both had the middle name Mayfly, sort of a joke between me and the memory of Red. There were probably a good number of human boys and girls named after that particular Martian. You couldn't say the name in Martian, a series of clacks and creaks and whistles that means 21 liter liter lifter liter. He saved me from dying of exposure, or stupidity. And a few years later, he saved the world by putting himself on the other side of the moon when he realized he'd become a planet-destroying time bomb. Not something that happens to ordinary heroes. The Martians had told us about the others early on. The other alien race that supposedly had brought the Martians to Mars, tens of thousands of years ago. At first, we wondered whether they were myth or metaphor, but the memory family, those who always wore yellow, like flying amber, insisted that the others were actual history, though from so far ago the memory was all but lost. They were as real as dirt, as real as death. The memory family didn't know that they had another function, besides using their eidetic memories to keep track of things. They also retained a coded message, generation after generation, that would be transmitted to humans when the time was right. The decoded message seemed innocuous. By means of a checkerboard digital picture, a Drake diagram, we learned that the others were a silicon nitrogen form of life. They evidently lived immersed in the liquid nitrogen seas of Triton, Neptune's largest moon. Various mysteries began to come together after the others revealed their existence, like the paradoxical combination of high technology and scientific ignorance in the Martian city. They apparently lived only in one huge underground complex about the size of a large city on Earth, but with more than half of it covered with creepy fungoid agriculture. The others had built the city and populated it with thousands of bioengineered Martians, evidently for the purpose of keeping an eye on Earth, an eye on humanity. The city had no obvious power source, but they had apparently limitless power from somewhere. Human scientists eventually figured it out, which gave us unlimited power as well, evidently bled off from some adjacent universe. I wonder what we'll do if they show up with a bill. The other that lived on Triton, many other others were light years away, gave us ample demonstration of what unlimited power can do. It nearly destroyed the satellite Triton in one tremendous explosion. An instant before the explosion, it escaped, or something did, in a spaceship that screamed away at more than 20 gravities acceleration. Its apparent destination was a small star called Wolf 25, about 24 light years away. Before the other made its spectacular exit, it prepared an equally spectacular exit for the human race. The head Martian, my friend Red, was unknowingly a direct conduit to the otherworldly source of energy that powered the Martian civilization. And when he died, that connection would open up, with world-destroying intensity. The world it destroyed would not be Mars. The other had contrived to send Red to Earth before the time bomb was triggered. Red knew he didn't have long. He asked my husband Paul, who was a pilot, to take him to the other side of the moon to die. There was no way of knowing exactly how large the explosion was going to be, but presumably the moon had enough mass to block it. It did. Red's funeral pyre was bright enough to be seen light years away, but only a few gamma rays leaked through. Would the others see the flare and assume that their little problem, the existence of the human race, had been solved? That was not likely. We had to go to them.